This is ExpertHR.com, your go-to HR compliance resource for federal, state, and municipal law. I'm David Weisenfeld for ExpertHR.com, published by Reed Business Information and proudly partnered with LexisNexis. On this podcast, we'll have a New York state of mind as we focus on a host of new employment laws in the Empire State. From paid sick leave to new pregnancy accommodations, medical marijuana, and more, there's a lot to discuss when it comes to the changes affecting New York employers, both at the state level and locally. And even if your company is not based in New York, these issues may be confronting HR professionals elsewhere soon, if they haven't done so in your region already. That's why I'm in the city that never sleeps in Midtown Manhattan to speak with New York employment attorney Jason Habinski. Jason is a partner with Haynes and Boone, where he represents employers. He also writes frequently on workplace issues, including a good deal of content for Expert HR. Jason, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure to be here, David.
Well, let's start with paid sick leave. Right here in New York City, a paid sick leave law took effect this year. What can you tell us about it?
Well, David, in April of this year, New York City passed what's referred to as the Earned Sick Time Act, which requires employers to provide sick leave to their employees. With respect to employers who have five or more employees, these employers are required to provide paid leave for their employees up to 40 hours of sick time per year, whereas smaller employers who have four or less employees are still required to provide sick time, but they can do that on an unpaid basis. The act also requires employers to provide notice to their employees, including to new employees, about the act itself and the requirements under the act. So it becomes very important for employers to check their policies and procedures with respect to sick time and make sure they're complying with the act. Fortunately, most employers, or many employers, will in fact already be complying with this act because they already provide time off for things like vacation. So there is a good chance that many employers out there in New York City already are complying with the act. But for those who aren't, now's a good time to check the policies and procedures and make sure the employers are in fact in compliance.
It seems like this is a trend that's really taking hold nationally. California just became the second state to require paid sick leave, joining Connecticut and a growing number of cities, including Seattle, Newark, New Jersey, and Portland, Oregon, have passed similar laws. Do you think we're going to see more of this going forward?
Definitely, David. I see there being a domino effect, and other cities and states are, in fact, going to jump on the bandwagon and implement similar legislation. Very often, what cities and states like to do is see what other cities and states and jurisdictions are in fact doing with legislation like this, look at the reaction from the public, look at statistics as to the good and the bad and the ugly of implementing similar statutes, and then they in fact will do so themselves. And with respect to sick leave policies and sick leave legislation, I have a feeling that a number of other jurisdictions are in fact going to do so.
And how about New York State? Sometimes it's in the forefront on employment law issues. Is there anything percolating in the legislature on this issue?
In fact, there is. There's actually a law which is very similar to the New York City Act, which was already passed. So I would suspect that New York State is also going to implement this probably in the near future.
Jason, we had a recent podcast, not to give too much of a shameless plug, on the growing number of restrictions on employers to ask criminal history questions of job applicants. Just across the Hudson River, New Jersey has enacted a ban-the-box law restricting private employers from asking these questions until after a first job interview. And although New York State doesn't yet have a ban-the-box law affecting private industry, two of its most notable cities, Buffalo and Rochester, do. How important do you see these laws being for HR folks?
These laws are going to be very important for human resources professionals and the companies that they work for. The laws themselves are going to pose very serious risks to companies. For example, should an employer or an HR professional not do an adequate or sufficient amount of research on an incoming employee, including looking at their backgrounds, which would include their criminal backgrounds, and that employee then does something dangerous or injures somebody or potentially breaks the law, that company could potentially be liable for negligently or recklessly hiring someone, or negligently or recklessly not doing the sufficient amount of research to uncover the fact that this employee was a risk. Also, now you have to balance that with the fact that if you ask the wrong question or you put the box on the application, you also could be violating the law. So it's going to be critical for companies and HR professionals to try to draw an appropriate balance between the risks and the parameters of the law, which really means that you should make sure not to include the box on the form, but instead ask the appropriate questions at the right time, which is once you get through the first part of the process and you've already narrowed down your applicants, but then it becomes important to ask the right questions to make sure that you're protecting the company, the public, and the company's employees.
And some cities are even going further than that. I know Washington, D.C. recently passed a law that said that you can't do a criminal background check or ask these questions until after a conditional job offer has been made. So it'd be interesting to see if we see more of that going forward.
And that also poses a risk to employers who are operating in multiple jurisdictions. Now what you have to do is make sure you understand the parameters in different locations where the employer works. And one thing I would suggest is for an employer to focus on the most stringent requirements in a location where they work and apply that across the board. I think that's the easiest and safest way to do it at this point.
Again, we're speaking with Jason Habinski, an employment attorney with Haynes and Boone in New York City. And Jason, let's shift gears to the issue of independent contractors. That's been such a big issue nationwide. And last year, New York became the 15th state to partner with the U.S. Department of Labor to fight worker misclassification. And it's further expanded its efforts to protect misclassified workers this year. What can you tell us about that?
New York joined several other states in partnering with the federal Department of Labor in order to crack down on what the state and federal government see as a very serious and rampant problem with companies misclassifying individuals as consultants or independent contractors rather than employees. The government see this, first of all, as an opportunity, of course, to catch up and raise revenue or gain the revenue they would have gotten had these employers paid taxes. But secondly, they're focusing on an issue that they think is serious and a big problem.
Now, the misclassification of workers, as you noted, is such a problematic area. Well, what's the number one mistake that you see employers making?
Well, there are a lot of mistakes that employers make. I think probably the most common mistake for employers is for them to say, this is not going to happen to me. And whether it's because a company happens to be a small company or a company happens to be a not-for-profit company or for whatever other reason, employers rather just avoid the problem and take their chances. But that's not in fact the case. It doesn't matter what size company you have. It doesn't even matter if you're a not-for-profit company. You never know the reason why the state or federal Department of Labor is going to either audit your company or look at a particular individual and determine whether or not that individual was misclassified. It could be because an individual decides to file for unemployment insurance. It could be for some reason an individual complains to an agency. It could be that the agencies are focusing on a particular industry or for some reason on that particular company. So that's a big problem in thinking it's not going to happen to you. The other common problem I see is companies thinking that they could simply just draft a consulting agreement or an independent contracting agreement with an individual and that will cover them. But that's not in fact the case. Agencies will look at that and it may help, but it's not dispositive and it's not going to save the day.
Yeah, if you have somebody who's working 35 or 48 hours and you just hand them a piece of paper and say, here, sign this, you're an independent contractor. It's not like magic dust, right?
That doesn't work. And in fact, it has very little effect these days. So that's clearly not going to save the day. And you need to focus more carefully on what that person is doing and how they're doing it in order to make that determination.
Well, another trend that New York has been a part of involves the legalization of medical marijuana. This summer, New York became the 23rd state to pass a legalization law, and it will deem qualifying patients disabled under the state's human rights law. But if I'm an employer, do I really need to do anything to alter my drug-free workplace policy in light of this law?
Well, the important thing about the New York statute is that it does, in fact, dictate that employers can still continue to monitor employee use of drugs, including marijuana, while in the workplace, while doing their job, and companies can still continue to enforce their drug-free policies. So while it does have some effect, employers can still require employees to perform their jobs and perform their jobs properly and not under the influence of drugs, including marijuana. But it does give employers a great and perfect opportunity to now look at those policies, make sure they're covered, make sure they're tight, make sure they include marijuana use while at work, and continue to not only implement but enforce those policies. If there's an employee who happens to be using drugs while working, including marijuana, enforce those policies.
That's a great segue to my next question, which is, as far as drug testing programs are concerned, medical marijuana generally has been found not to excuse a failed test. Does that also hold true in New York?
It's, I hate to say this, but a smoky and hazy area still, because it hasn't been, there hasn't been enough case law with the new passage of the statute to really figure out where the courts are going to go with this. In many other states, in fact, in most other states, courts have held that a failed drug test is still grounds to either terminate somebody or refuse to hire somebody. So I would say most likely this is the way the New York courts are going to go, but there are some potential issues and conflicts with other laws. For example, New York has a Lawful Activities Act, which says that you cannot take employment action against someone for doing something they're allowed to lawfully do outside of the workplace. So technically, if someone's using medical marijuana and technically they're lawfully allowed to do so and they fail a drug test, and you terminate that person or refuse to hire that person, an argument could be made that you are violating the Lawful Activities Act. So there's a big question as to how the courts are going to interpret not only this statute, but the way it plays with other statutes in New York.
It's such a fascinating area because, of course, it's still illegal under federal law, which adds kind of a bit to the intrigue.
That's true. I mean, that's a big issue. It's in conflict with federal law, and courts are going to have to resolve how the state laws play with the fact that the federal law still prohibits it.
Jason, in terms of what else is going on out there, are there any other notable New York laws you see as being especially significant?
Sure. Well, first of all, it's important to note that both New York City and New York State have become very active in taking steps through legislation as well as through court decisions in protecting employees. So there have been several new developments over the last year and two which are protecting employees in New York. A couple that we haven't mentioned yet so far, one is with respect to unpaid interns. Both New York City and New York State have amended the human rights laws to protect unpaid interns and make very clear that even if you're unpaid, even if you're an intern, you still deserve and are permitted to use the benefits and the protections of the human rights law to protect your work in the workplace. And the way this came about is there was a district court case where in New York where the court determines that an intern wasn't protected under the New York City human rights law simply by virtue of the fact that she was an unpaid intern rather than an employee. So New York City quickly jumped on that, particularly after there was a lot of publicity with respect to that case. And in fact, when the issue went viral, New York City took quick action and amended the human rights law to make very clear that an unpaid intern is covered and is protected against discrimination and harassment and the like under the New York City law. And New York State did the same thing shortly thereafter and made very clear that unpaid interns are in fact protected under that human rights law.
Let's close with the subject of pregnancy discrimination. State lawmakers have been looking to expand protections for pregnant workers, And New York City enacted a law earlier this year requiring reasonable accommodations for pregnant workers. Tell us who this applies to and what are some key takeaways?
Sure. New York City did, in fact, change their law to protect pregnant women as being disabled under the law. Therefore, employers who were covered by New York City human rights law, which include employers with four or more employees, they, in fact, have to reasonably accommodate pregnant women who may ask for reasonable accommodations. And those accommodations could be various things, something as simple as longer breaks to, you know, for intake of water. It could be not having to stand to perform your job. It could be increased bathroom breaks. Whatever steps could be taken to make the life and job of a pregnant woman easier in the workplace.
It's a fascinating issue to watch because the Supreme Court is taking up a case on this very issue in Young versus UPS this fall, involving the circumstances in which an employer has to offer a reasonable accommodation to an employee under the Pregnancy Discrimination Act. So what's your advice, Jason, for HR in light of the current state of the law if a pregnant worker were to come forward and ask for an accommodation?
It's really a perfect storm of protections for pregnant women in the workplace. You have the Supreme Court coming out one way or the other, but regardless of that, you have agencies, including the EEOC, looking to protect pregnant women. You have cities and states passing laws like New York City did. Therefore, it makes perfect sense for employers to take whatever steps they can to reasonably accommodate pregnant women in the workplace, certainly for the time being until we hear what the Supreme Court says, but even after, there are still going to be protections for pregnant women in the workplace.
Okay, well, let that be the last word. Jason, thanks so much for joining us today.
It was my pleasure. It was great to be here.
Jason Habinski is a partner in the Labor and Employment Practice Group in the New York office of Haynes and Boone. You can check out his employment law summaries on statewide and national employment law subjects on experthr.com. I'm David Weisenfeld. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Continue checking our website regularly for more podcasts on key employment topics affecting the world of HR. The opinions expressed in this program do not represent legal advice, nor should they necessarily be taken as the views of Expert HR or its employees. ExpertHR.com is published by Reed Business Information and is proudly partnered with LexisNexis. For more information about Expert HR and our subscription offering, call us toll-free at 1-855-973-7847. Again, that's 1-855-973-7847. And if you mention listening to this podcast, we'll give you 20% off a new subscription. Copyright 2014, all rights reserved.